Okay. This is an interview with Dr. Rudolph Acuna of the Chicano Studies Department, San Fernando Valley State College, for the Oral History Project by Vicki Porter at San Fernando Valley State College on May 8, 1972 at 10:30. Dr. Acuna, I came specifically to ask you about your role in founding the Chicano Studies Department here.
Well, I was just an instrument. Here, they had a series of confrontations starting in 68 where the black students burned down the fifth floor of the school.
Mm-hmm.
After that time, Chicano students who were in the minority at that time, about 30 of them, kept on protesting with blacks and the coalition of white radicals. It ended with a series of confrontations on January 9th, 1969, where they, at that particular time, they started a series of sit-ins, and about 300 were arrested on two successive days. And the administration saw that there would be no peace until they negotiated a contract with the blacks and Chicano students. The upshot of it is that they committed themselves to bring 350 students in a year, that were Chicano 350 black, until we reached parity. We reflected our population in the community. Also, they agreed to a Chicano Studies Department, they agreed to Community Center, and other demands. At that time, I was in Dominguez Hills, and I was coming back to Pierce College, where I had tenure, and I had I was going to start working there in another city colleges to get Chicano Studies. However, I had been working through the Experimental College for 2 years here, with the UMAS group at that time, United Mexican American Students. And I'd been working in the communities in organizations since 61, as a teacher since 58. And I knew many of these students, many of the students I'd taught. We had worked together, and so they approached me and they told me they wanted me to become the Chicano Studies director here, or chairman. I was reluctant at first, however, knowing the community, I knew we would have community support, knowing the school would probably maximize my efficiency and my ability to work with students, because I considered that very important. There was a committee made up for selection of community students and faculty on campus. I knew that I was going to be appointed way ahead of time. And what happened was that the selection committee just got up and told the faculty, the students and the community told them, well, do you want Rudy Acuna? The faculty said, well, let's review all of the applicants. They said, no, we know who we want. Let's stop going through all this bullshit. So they agreed, and under the agreement, they would bring me as a professor, and I would get tenure within a year. They did this because it would maximize my particular role in negotiating with all faculty and also with them. But they would have one professor in there that would be tenured.
Right after that?
Yeah. I came in on the Ides of March of 1969, where I got my release from Dominguez Hills. However, I still had to go there at 8 o'clock every day to teach one class. And so what happened, I used to travel in there, and I used to come here, and just be here by 10, and work until that time, 12 at night. I had spent time before the Ides of March with students and with faculty, and that we had, studied every faculty member, where they were in key committees, who we could count upon, and what our strategy was going to be. Our objectives from the first were to have the Chicano Studies Department be an integral part of the school and at the same time remain almost totally autonomous. We also wanted the growth to be a hard growth. We didn't want it to be a soft growth. Therefore, it was agreed that the Chicano Studies Department would not go after any grants.
I understand.
They would not go for anything that the salaries of the professors would be paid from the outside. We wanted the professors' salaries always to be put in the inside. My particular duties, and I was part of a team, and the students that we had here, the key students, were Mike Verdugo, who was the key student, fantastic mind. Then there was Beto Ruiz, there was Raul Aragon, and there was Hank Lopez, who played a very effective supporting role. However, Mike was at that time the key student. It was decided that it would be my particular duties to develop curriculum, negotiate with the administration for positions, and at that time to just establish the department. We had a series of negotiations with the administration, and the administration from the beginning was paying much more attention to the black students on campus because they had much more power. They outnumbered us about 10 to 1. So another thing was to start organizing our particular student group in order to make it effective. And that would also be part of my assignment, but that would be just one part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, I started negotiating with the administration here. The administration was fairly patronizing. And they figured that I was a PhD and I wasn't going to do anything to rock the boat. However, I had the thing that I was a full professor working on, even though the school committee of Anglo professors recommended that I only be hired as a lecturer. However, I wouldn't accept it, and the president had overridden it. The negotiations for faculty were key. The administration wanted to give us two professors, including myself. We wanted more than that. The central negotiations with them were those of confrontation, where we demanded parity with the black. They tried to play the blacks against us. However, we said, well, we don't care. If you give us parity, that's what we'll take, and that's what we demand. There were a series of confrontations, which I won't go into. I have been during that time, my resignation just over the negotiations about four times, and I had not been working with them at that time. And I even called up the dean at 12 o'clock at night and called him a motherfucking son of a bitch. But he was a liar. He was lying to us because he was giving the blacks, for example, money to bring in consultants from St. Louis. He was, as he told us, he didn't have any money to bring in the candidates to recruit, etc. The upshot of it is that we got six positions. Later on, they reneged on their particular agreement in that they gave the blacks about 11 positions. However, we didn't care about this because we had six, and this is what we could accommodate for solid growth. And we figured the first year we wouldn't overexpand, and six we could offer a good program. The other phase was negotiations in curriculum. The key to our survival would be if we could get a piece of that general education package. Therefore, our curriculum had to be interdisciplinary. And then we sold the school on the idea that our English classes would count as English credits, our history classes would count as history credits, etc. So for the two-year package, the Chicano could almost take all of these science, humanities, mm-hmm. arts under the Chicano
in
study
the department.
And annual students could also do the same thing. The curriculum, as we developed it, had to be approved by the EPC, that's the Educational Policies Committee here on campus, the Curriculum Committee. Our strategy was to come in with as many proposals as possible because we came to the conclusion that the atmosphere may change in a year. If it changes in a year, we may not be able to get many of these classes through because they were in competition with the Spanish department, they were in competition with the English department, etc., etc. So it was decided, even though we had a deadline of 2 weeks, we would put in 42 course proposals and with bibliography, etc. So I stood up all night those times and we put together, or it was my obligation at that time, I put together 42 course proposals, everything imaginable. We also had to write up a major and a minor presented to the education policies. Then we also had to have a report to the chancellor's office that justifying the program.
This was all taking place in the spring of 1916.
All the spring. It was all in March, April, May. By May, it was all over. So we had it was pressure almost every meeting, almost every day. Same time, I had to recruit my teachers. It's very difficult to start a new faculty because you have to mold a team, you have to have personalities. And different people were hired for very different reasons, to be very honest. One of the first persons I put on was Pérez Sandoval, Dr. Javier Pérez Sandoval, who had been a friend since 63 and who had been a graduate student with me at USC. He had signed a contract with San Diego, and I just wanted what I wanted him, because he was a personal friend, one I could always count upon. Also, he had a very good analytic mind, which many times would temporize my particular gut reactions, which are usually radical, based on mostly some of my political orientation that I had gotten since I was a child from a neighbor who was a very radical person, and she had helped me an awful lot with my political ideology. But I knew that he could analyze documents, he could analyze situations, and I listened. Then we brought in, so Dennis Andovan was a Mexican national. We would take care of literature courses. We had to balance him with a coach, Fortune, who was from here. We then called up the Berkeley area, and I got a hold of Carlos Arson, who was a very brilliant student, who was very analytical, but was almost the opposite of Pérez Sandoval in many ways. It's much more political, it's more social in his orientation. We picked him up because he also had tremendous charisma with students. We also picked up Jose Hernandez because he had the so-called academic qualifications, that he graduated from Ohio State, having his master's from Ohio State, etc. We picked up Jerry Resendez because he was very versatile. And he was an ex-Christian brother who we knew would go off on tangents and would put out an awful lot of work. At that particular time, we picked up several other teachers to make it six. In the summer, we found out also that Cal State LA wasn't going to pick up Raul Ruiz because of his sit-ins and some of his radical education. However, we needed somebody of his activist caliber, because you see, almost every person is selected just like you get a baseball team, somebody plays first base, somebody plays second base.
Specific
stuff. You just had to balance it. Everyone had the quality that they were good group workers. And this is one of the prerequisites. We wanted a team worker. We didn't want anyone that was a strong personality.
Yeah.
Even though we have a couple of them. However, we knew that they were going to be working off campus more than they were going to be working on campus. But the on campus people were the nucleus of the constant experience of everything. We knew we were very good team people. So the recruiting we did in the spring of 1969.
What particular academic background do you have that specifically qualified you to teach Chicano studies?
I had been in an interdisciplinary program. I gotten from Sutton at USC through into the Latin American Studies major for my PhD. At the time, I was ridiculous because it probably retarded my my graduation for 2 years, because I just got my master's in 62 from Cal State LA, and I've been teaching U.S. history. And so I could have taken two U.S. history fields and Latin American fields and an outside field, and I thought I could have finished probably in 66, 65. However, I got talked into it, and I had to go and take literature courses. I had to go and take political science courses. And it gave me a good framework in the curriculum development of a studies program. Then I saw what they were doing wrong at USC, and so I had that background. Also at Dominguez Hills, their particular curriculum was also American Studies, Latin American Studies, Asian Studies. And so I knew what an interdisciplinary program was. So that gave me a fairly good background. Then I had been a school teacher. I taught junior high school, junior college, and at the university level. And so I knew the function of education. And so therefore, education, I knew the courses that would pertain to Chicano in that area. I thought probably what had helped me the most is my own particular background, which was one of varied experiences. I worked from, when I got my undergraduate degree, I worked 60 hours a week and carried 18 units, and therefore I had done that. I'd also been a night school teacher, adult school, when I was getting my PhD, and I taught in the high school, and also I worked one night a week to take my position and carried 4 units at night. So I knew things, and I knew how to cut corners. I've always learned how to negotiate, because I always had to negotiate my own programs.
You taught primarily history classes and Latin American history classes.
Yeah, and Spanish classes, you know, introductory Spanish classes. And, you know, so I had that background, and I think that helped me.
What influence do you feel that the founding of your department has had on the development of the Chicano Studies program, say, at USC or at Dominguez Hills or Cal State LA? Were you, like, a forerunner? Was this department one of the first?
I didn't say that, because, you know, there were many currents. We went to Santa Barbara, and we were kind of Santa Barbara. We were the only ones that had something written down. Therefore, just the mere fact that we were the ones that had something written down, many other programs modeled themselves after us and set after us. Our successes, we're up to 18 instructors. Next semester we'll have 18 full-time instructors. We're one of the only departments here on campus that has grown in the last 2 years. And you can see the activity out there. And we'll probably be, like, now the administration is up, like, for example, like 350 commitment to 525
per year. New Chicano students.
New Chicano per year. And so, and this is just on UOP.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, they've seen the successes.
That's good.
And while they're still very wary, because we have the strongest student group on campus, like, for example, we just took the AS elections. The president, the vice president, Chicano, and we took 7 seats in the Senate. So therefore, this is the second time in 3 years we control the student senate. So we're a force here on campus, and this has been
very viable when it changes.
And the administration knows that our group is the only group that is together enough to close down the school.
Mm-hmm.
And so it gives them up a lot of political power and use it to its nth degree.
Mm-hmm.
And also gives us power in the independent registration, where we have a committed solid block of students who will take our courses. And our professors too. For example, one of the things that I'm proudest of was my role in purging the chairman. When I became chairman after about a year, I'd go to places, and it was always Rudy's program, and people who knew me up and down the state. And I believe that this was a very unhealthy situation. So I went to the faculty and explained to them that the group, that the program had to find its own identity.
outside of you as a personality.
Outside of myself as a personality, and outside of several other people who are personalities. Mm-hmm. And that we should purge the chairman. And that the chairman should not be in there more than one academic year. I've been in there for 1.5 academic years. So we get on the plan. The first they injected, they said, well, why don't you stay in for another year? But I knew that if I stayed in for another year, that time would have permanized itself. So what we happened was that we hit on a plan where the vice chairman would become chairman the following year, and they would get that background of working with the chairman, working with the procedures, the department of procedures. So right now we have a rotating chairmanship, where the chairman is now only chairman for a year, and then he has to work under the chairman. Mm-hmm. I myself am head of curriculum and personnel and promotions. I work under the chairman. At the present time, we're purging me again. Right here is the center downstairs. Is the center, and you have your student contacts. Where my power is right now is that I have an awful lot of, being here from the beginning, I have an awful lot of privilege established just by the mere fact of being first. Mm-hmm. And I have an awful lot of influence on many groups of students. So we have our factions, and most of them, I've never gotten into factional fights with them, so we're friends. Mm-hmm. So this gives you a certain amount of power. So to neutralize this type of power, we're moving up to the fifth floor, and we're moving some of the other professors that are down here up
back
there,
upstairs.
And we're moving some of them downstairs. We've also this year signed a pledge saying that if every 50% of students vote to get rid of us, even though we have tenure, we're automatically handing our resignation. I'll do it if a third of the students vote that if I'm no longer effective, I'll mm-hmm. sign my pledge and resign. And many other professors will do that. But this is the purging of the faculty. I think this is very necessary.
I think that's a really excellent idea. Did you have a class at 11?
Yeah.
And it's about 6 minutes out.
Okay.
We can conclude it right now.
Yeah, any specific questions?